You are listening to the Focus on the Beer podcast, discussing the Colorado Springs beer scene and beyond. Enjoy the show. On the beer, I'm Ryan Hannigan. I'm here with Josh Howard.
I live.
Yeah, well, we all live. None of us have died. The pandemic has not taken us, but we are still over Zoom and we are still recording. But we're actually drinking the same beer this time, which is sort of a new thing for us.
Our powers of coordination have grown.
We're getting better at this thing. Finally, you know, we've only been doing it for 6 years now, and.
Yeah,
finally.
Sporadically.
Finally, correct. Yeah, I think our last episode was in August of last year. So, you know, maybe. Every 9 months or so is perfect, right?
Yeah. Any babies that were conceived during our last episode are now about coming to term, and I immediately regret that reference.
All of our beer babies. I'm kidding. Essentially, this episode, I feel like every episode that we do now is like a restart. So this isn't a restart, so I'm not going to even say that. We're going to talk about some new beer styles that are out there. We've got an article that's on the website about cold IPAs, so we're going to jump into that here in a little bit. We'll talk about some beer releases that came out, including the one that we're going to be drinking here for Boulder Beer. And then a bunch of different events that are upcoming this spring, summer, and into the fall. So we'll start off talking about cold IPAs. Now, I just cracked a cold IPA.
What's a cold IPA?
Aren't cold IPAs, aren't all beers cold IPAs? Like, when do you heat up your IPA in the microwave? Like, does it taste good better that way?
Well, there is that whole thing where you stick a hot poker in beer, but I don't think anyone's doing that with IPA. Cold IPA sounds like hype and marketing to me. Because it sure isn't the BJCP style. I mean, that's what I'm here for, is to be that policy wonk on BJCP stuff, right?
And that's the thing, is it's not a BJCP style. My opinion on it is it's actually an evolution of the brewed IPA. So if you remember, the brewed IPA came out, 2018-ish, the Social Kitchen and Brewery out of San Francisco really sort of pioneered the style of this super, super dry IPA. And they were using a brewing enzyme to dry the beer out instead of, tweaking.
And I feel like this is maybe the response to that, is people not wanting to pony up for that enzyme, which is probably, got an additional cost to it. They're trying to find a way around it and achieve the same results. That's kind of my read on it based on, your research and what you put in the article.
Yeah. And so what I made the connection that I think it's an extenuation of the brute IPA. Brute IPAs are sort of there's a couple places doing it. I know Red Swing has a brute IPA right now, and it's crisp, but it's not what I remember like people saying a brute IPA was supposed to be. I think that the original description of a brute IPA is that it's a zero Play-Doh beer. It is dry as, crisp, dry. It's almost like water in like its final gravity, but it's hoppy. It's closer to what like these hop seltzers that Lagunitas is putting out. It's closer to that type of body, but then it's 6 or 7% alcohol, which is, I think, hard to do without that amyloglucosidase enzyme eating those long chain sugars and getting rid of the things that your malt is keeping there. So from the research I did on these cold IPAs, to sort of give a little basis on why I thought this up and why I was like, I should probably put out an article on this. 10 Barrel Brewing sent me a sample of their new cold IPA. It's their Rock Hop cold IPA. And it's, for lack of a better term, it's labeled as an IPA, cold IPA. But in a lot of their terminology, they talk about being an India Pale Lager, which is sort of a misnomer in this term, but it might be that sort of bridge to people so they know sort of what they're getting into. But, in me looking into what this was, it sort of opened up that floodgate so that I could, you know, learn a little bit more about this. And I wanted to share that with our readers so they could sort of learn about this if they see that. I know that like Fossil had one out last fall-ish, like a cold IPA, I think. Metrics had one on. And I never got a chance to have those. So I can't say, you know, I can't speak to how those ones tasted. This one is, it's crisper. It's a little bit more, like you get more of the hops out of it. You don't get as much of the beer, that like, you know, that quintessential malt backbone that we always talk about with, you know, balancing beers. From my research, like cold IPAs are created as a way to accentuate those hop flavors so that the beer actually showcases the different parts of the hops without having the beer get in the way of the hops. And so the difference between a cold IPA and an India Pale Lager is that most India Pale Lagers are just a standard IPA recipe where someone's thrown lager yeast at it and fermented it cold, which is, you know, that's great. It works, but sometimes, you know, lager yeasts are going to kick off a lot more esters. They're going to kick a lot of more sulfur dioxide. And those things sometimes don't play very well with American hops.
Well, that, and I think you said something too about them trying to put that lager yeast at a higher temp, which tends to make it a bit more estery too. So they're kind of skirting a razor's edge with some of this stuff, it sounds like.
Well, so that's actually what they do to make one of these cold IPAs, is they usually do a lager at a little warmer temperature to reduce the esters.
They may be using like Quebec yeast for that, because I think that would make a lot of sense. Because honestly, those, you know, work really well for fermenting at higher temps and then cold crashing and lagering really well. I mean, maybe that's the trick.
I think the idea is that they're not actually lagered. So it's almost like that the California Common style where you're using a Kolsch yeast but you're fermenting it warmer. So you get that sort of cleaner fermentation that you're usually when you're trying to use, you know, a lager yeast, you're trying to get some of those sulfur compounds and those esters to really sort of bring that style to the beer. And then fermenting it just a little warmer, not like a hot fermentation. I think it's just a slightly warmer one just to sort of cut down on those esters. So the yeast isn't as stressed. And so it's not, you know, pooping out those esters because it's stressed under those cold temperatures. You know, it's a little warmer. It's able to actually work a little bit more smoothly. I think that's the idea behind it. But the other part about these cold IPAs is the idea of using adjuncts in them. So a lot of the brewers making cold IPAs will do an up to like 30% rice or corn, because that allows you to get that really crisp flavor or crisp sort of mouthfeel flavor without adding too much extra non-fermentables and things that are going to
protein in
there, things that are going to alter that end taste. So I think it's super interesting. And then the last piece that a lot of them are doing is a lot with what a lot of the hazy and juicy brewers are doing, and they're doing the biotransformation of the hops. So they're adding those hops at the high Krausen state of that fermentation. So there's a little bit of that chemical transformation of the hop itself. So you're not just getting this pure hop burn from this massive dry hop.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because that's what I feel is the difference between these and a dry hopped lager. Cause I feel like a lot of times brewers will make a dry hopped lager where they've had this lager that's been sitting and, you know, it's crisp and clean and crushable. And then they just dry hop the hell out of it. And there's really not much, it's two different things that weren't really supposed to go together, but they're just being forced together. And so they don't really play well together.
You got peanut butter in my chocolate sort of thing, right?
Yeah. It works, but it's not always the most elegant. So
makes sense.
So, you know, I've got this one from 10 Barrel and it's pretty good. It's not as, you know, to be honest.
Does it list what they're using for hops at all? Just out of curiosity.
I believe it. Maybe not here. Maybe I have it somewhere else. Let me see real quick. I can pull that up.
I know you did allude to the fact that they're using American hops, so I figure there's at least one or two sea hops in there.
Yeah, actually not a whole lot. Azaka, Kashmir. I think I saw Idaho 7.
Okay. Taking a little more of a fruit-forward hop approach than a...
Yeah.
Or melon tropical type thing.
Let's see. Azaka, Kashmir, El Dorado, and Idaho 7. So sort of the newer style that a lot of the juicy and hazy ones are using these days. Mm-hmm. Only like 45 IBUs is what they're saying. So, you know, it's similar to like a West Coast IPA in that assertiveness of the hops, but instead of that crazy caramely beer undercurrent that you get with that West Coast IPA, it's a little more subdued. It's clean, it's crisper. It allows those piney and resiny and citrusy flavors from those hops shine and be the star of the show.
Well, and really, if you look at what an IPA is supposed to be, it's supposed to be a dry, you know, crisp example of a beer. You know, that's the whole P in there is for pale ale, India pale ale. It should be a pale, you know, not overly malty showcase for hops. So in a way, it's maybe even getting back towards what IPAs should be.
Yeah. And this, to be honest, it's really clean. Like the beer side of it, it has some good, it's got a little carameliness to it, but it's really sort of, it's subdued compared to the hops, but the hops are super in your face, but they're not like, it's not like Pliny the Younger or Pliny the Elder where it's this just, you know, yeah. You've got a pine salt tongue where you're just like, I have to like
harkening back to the early 2000s IBU wars type of stuff.
Right. It's sort of, you know, I would almost measure that it's a response to that and to like these brewed IPAs. So they've sort of taken, you know, let's take some of these heavy handed hopping things and use some of those techniques, use some of the techniques from the hazy and juicy people where they're doing this biotransformation of the hops, but then also grab from these lager brewers that have been doing it for years and sort of this sort of amalgamation of all these different brewing techniques to make what I think is a pretty darn great style of IPA. And it's, you know, and that's the thing is that it's still considered an IPA. And I think that's the key thing is that it's not, so I don't think it's truly lagered because it's still a, you know, it's a lager yeast, but it's at a higher fermentation temperature than that yeast is normally lagering at. So I think it's interesting. I think it will see, we'll see, you know, it might be just like brewed IPA where, you know, 2018, 2019 were like, everybody was making brewed IPAs and not all of them were good. Some of them were okay. Some of them were really weird because I think that the dosing on that enzyme, you had to get it right or else it messed up what the beer tasted like, because it's eating through everything. And so yeah. Either if you underdose it and it's not able to eat through it, then you have this sort of weird sweet thing, or if it overdoes it and it's just super duper dry and you've maybe put too many hops on top of it.
I think that and the other problem you ran into is if that thing got on your cold side at all, it would just wreck beer in your fermenters. Like you had to have it in there in the boil to snip all your sugars, but if it got to the other side, it would take out all your malty beers. So it was a little bit dangerous in that regard. I remember them talking about that at RMMS a year or two ago, and it was kind of a cautionary tale about, you know, this enzyme is great, but there's some risks,
right?
And getting it cleaned out was apparently kind of difficult.
Interesting. That might be a reason why these brewed IPAs aren't as prevalent these days because of the, you know, the, and I knew that it took like when you added that to the mash or boil, because of that, it always added a couple days on the fermentation side of things just to make sure everything cleaned up and was good to go.
And you'd put it in the mash because the boil is what would kill it off.
Right.
And that's how you control it getting over to the cold side.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So we'll see if this, you know, if cold IPAs are something we're talking about here in a year or two, or if they're just another flash in the pan sort of, you know, I know we talked about like Colorado IPAs a bunch of years ago where people are doing these sour IPAs in Colorado. Numerous breweries were making them. I don't think anybody's making a sour IPA anymore. So there's a lot of these sort of, you know, sub styles that catch on for a little bit and then disappear.
I think it's something that's going to get rebranded again. You know, cold IPA will probably just end up being an IPA at some point later, or it'll get called something else, much like, you know, the hoppy sours have kind of gone to the, well, now it's dry hopped sours, you know, it's
right.
It's different ways of doing the same thing, but it's marketing jargon. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just, you know, the product maturing, I guess, is the way I would look at it.
Well, and if the industry itself doesn't define a style around it, it's hard to sort of keep it. It doesn't have as much staying power if there's no like guidelines.
Yeah, without a bar that's set, yeah. You know, and especially if you want to win a medal for your cold IPA, if you don't have a standard to look at and then go up against other breweries with, it's just, you know, a cool little tasty gimmick that you got on your menu, but you know, it won't necessarily be award winning.
Right. Well, that's all for now. We've got more information in our blog post. Also lists a couple different versions of it that are around town. I know Mash Mechanics has one right now. Rock Bottom, who just got a new brewer, Scott Roberts, they're going to be brewing one pretty soon here. It'll be interesting to have him out at Rock Bottom. He was at Elizabeth Brewing for a long time, had a stint over at Deuces Wild, and then is now at Rock Bottom, and is really bringing, I think, some really interesting, just sort of fresh blood to Rock Bottom. So here's hoping that the corporate world doesn't ruin him. I'm excited to sort of see what he's able to do over there. So yeah.
We wish him luck in his new endeavors.
So segue into Josh's favorite style of beer.
So apparently we're not going to talk about smoked beers.
Oh, nope, we're not. No Bamberg grass beer. No. Sorry.
So anyone who knows me for any length of time knows that I, you know, say I don't like coffee beers. And really a lot of that stems from years of judging homebrew competitions where people would enter these stouts into the stout category and then they're like, oh, it's an espresso stout. I'm like, this person has added a ton of coffee to this beer and it's not supposed to be in this category. And I got super gun shy of judging stouts for that reason, because it got so hard to just get kicked in the mouth every time someone did an espresso stout. And I get it. People love coffee. People love coffee in their beer. I'm not one of those people. If you want to put coffee in a beer, I expect it to be like any other beer that has fruit or any other adjuncts added to it. I want it to be balanced. And that's really all I'm asking for. And some people just go way too heavy-handed with the coffee. So I'm gun-shy of the style for that reason. Now, that said, what we're drinking today, I like it. And I'll let Ryan tell you about what we're actually drinking here now that I've had my TED talk.
Yeah, so a couple years ago, Boulder Beer Company pretty much went out of business. I think sold off their brew house, went through a lot of sort of bankruptcy proceedings. And then sort of, I think it was the last year or the year before, word came out that the sort of the remaining assets of Boulder Beer Company and the brand had been purchased by a group headed up by Sleeping Giant, which is the contract brewer out of Denver. And I'm actually pulling up their all the information about it. But essentially,
and a lot of their brewing had actually been outsourced to Sleeping Giant anyway when they shut down their, like, they still kept like a couple of brew pubs open, I think is what it is, but then they sold off their entire brewery and all that equipment, and then eventually they shut down the rest of it, and that led to what you were talking about, where Sleeping Giant and that group with them kind of acquired the rights, I guess, to Boulder Beer, so to speak.
Yeah, and so essentially what they did is Boulder Beer's brew pub closed down completely in Boulder in January of 2020. And after that, Matt Osterman from Sleeping Giant approached the owners of Boulder Beer and basically said, hey, let's keep it alive. And so they basically gave Sleeping Giant creative and operational control of Boulder Beer, while sort of preserving the ideals of the, you know, original company. And I think Osterman, the guy from Sleeping Giant, is from Boulder. So it's sort of like this hometown thing. It's if like you grew up here in Colorado Springs and Bristol was going out of business and you had the opportunity to revive that brand. It's sort of that sort of style. And, you know, Boulder Beer was the very first brew pub in the country, the like microbrewery in the country in 1979. They beat out, you know, funny story, they beat out Carver Brewing in Durango by like a month or two because the owner of Carver Brewing was on a ski trip instead of opening his bakery brewery. So tells you what they, you know, Boulder and Durango are the two sort of places where they're very similar thinking.
That's the most Colorado way to delay opening something.
I'm on a ski trip. Yeah, it's not going to happen. But I think what they did the best way, they did a really good thing, you know, in taking over this old brand, they rebranded everything. And so if you remember old Boulder Beer, it was sort of quirky. It had almost a, like, it reminded me a lot of Flying Dog in that sort of illustrative way, a lot of sort of early Trinity stuff where it is that sort of late 90s, early 2000s, very sort of cartoony illustrations for beer. And they went to this really stark, almost like checkerboard type thing that looks sort of like the Boulder race logo-ish, but it looks like the Flatirons outside of Boulder.
Yeah, I was going to say they're going for that kind of Flatiron range type of look. It's basically, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's like three equal signs kind of kicked to a 30-degree angle and lined up next to each other. So it's, I mean, it works.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you it doesn't work because it does.
It's really unique. It's really sort of striking. It doesn't look like a beer company. Like, it looks like something that would be like a running company or something like that. Like it,
yeah, a shoe logo.
Yeah, yeah. It does sort of have that like Nike-esque type of thing, but it works. And this can, I will have to say, like, their cans, the screen printing on this is nice.
Yeah. I was in Coltrane today, and ran into a couple people I knew, and I said, you know, you should try and see if you can find this beer from Boulder Beer. And they had like half a flat of them left, and we found it and handed it to them there. And the first thing they said was, man, these cans are nice. Like, they were impressed by the, you know, kind of satin feel to them.
Yeah.
And the printed can, they thought that was the first thing they noticed. So it's a good thing to mention for sure.
So was this available at Coltrane?
Yeah. There was like four packs that I found sitting out with the Irish beers.
Nice.
So, you know, for St. Patrick's Day, there was also a mint, chocolate mint Guinness there that I almost pulled the trigger on just out of curiosity's sake. But
that sounds interesting.
Did not.
Interesting and weird, but that's okay. So essentially, so brand aside, what we're trying from Boulder Beer is their new release, which is called their Irish Blessing beer. It's a coffee stout aged on Jameson Irish whiskey soaked oak chips. Now, I think... You know, I don't remember what the rationale behind oak chips was. But it seems like maybe they didn't have the time to get a barrel, and it was easier to just do oak chips versus, you know, sourcing a Jameson barrel and then waiting to
age. Well, I mean, if you're going to get real Jameson barrels, those have to be shipped over here from Ireland, and with shipping being what it is, yeah, you know, maybe their thought was they wanted to get them, but they just couldn't for purely logistical reasons, because we're all kind of stuck in that, you know, end of pandemic. I don't want to say post-pandemic, you know, shipping shenanigan still. So I think that may have been a big part of the reason why they couldn't maybe source a barrel for it.
Yeah. And the explanation given in their sort of press release about it was that they decided to use the oak chips because there's greater surface area. So, and, you know, basically I think that sounds like they're trying to speed up the process, but also to sort of boost that flavor in that shorter amount of time. And then they said something about, you know, being legally prohibited from incorporating residual distilled spirits into the beer, which I feel like you just don't say that. Like, there's so many different barrel aged places that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and I think that is probably the most solid rationale for oak chips is, you know, you're not spending 6 months in barrel with the beer,
yeah,
and then, you know, risking your possible oxygen exposure and all that fun stuff. But darned if it doesn't make for good beer, though.
And so this beer actually first came out in 2017. And then, so this is sort of the rebirth of it. And they claim it's one of their most requested beers to date, which, you know, it's interesting. It's it's good. I don't get the, you know, they talk about it being,
I'm not getting a ton of barrel out of it.
I don't get a whole lot of barrel. I don't get a whole lot of Jameson.
Yeah, it's just kind of a smoothed out coffee stout.
And, you know, maybe a little bit of the bitterness, I can taste a little of that oak in there, but it's really interesting because it sounds like they soaked the oak chips in Jameson and then dried them completely out and then added them. So I wonder how much of that Jameson flavor was even able to make it into the barrels, into the beer.
Yeah.
So it's really good. The other beer that they put out at the same time as this is the other one that I'm really excited about, which is the sort of relaunch of their Killer Penguin barley wine.
I was always a fan of that one. You know, of course, trying to put down a 22-ounce bomber of that by yourself was a daunting task. So it's nice to see that they've gone to a smaller format with that in a 16-ounce can.
Yeah,
that's doable.
And these ones are super awesome because they're aged in Laws bourbon barrels for 3 months. So it's basically it's an English-style barley wine aged in bourbon barrels, which is, in my opinion, one of the best styles of barley wine that you can pretty much do.
Oh, for sure. Like, American barley wines are essentially, you know, triple IPAs. And then some of them, you know, really need to sit for a bit before they're really good. I mean, Bigfoot barley wines, you know, they're an OG for sure, but they need to sit a few years because they're just too bitter, too hoppy up front for me to drink right away. I have to sit on them for at least a couple of years before I even consider drinking them. So yes, English is the way to go is where I'm going with that.
Oh yeah. So we're drinking the coffee one, which is, yeah, it's okay. I'm probably not going to finish this one right now. Just because it's got a lot of coffee in it and not really feeling the coffee right now.
Yeah. It's good.
It's definitely
good. You know, as the not liking coffee guy, I endorse this beer.
Yeah, and if you're looking for something that's like, I want to drink a beer that says Irish on it, but I don't like Irish red ales, or and I don't want to drink a green beer because it's usually just Bud Light with blue food color in it, go to Coltrane, go to one of your local liquor stores and see if they have this beer. It's in 4-packs of 16-ounce cans. It's got a really nice smooth label on it. It'd be a good sort of, you know, mid afternoon, late early evening sipper.
Speaking of 4-packs that I found at Coltrane today, 105 West had their Imperial Irish Red ale there, the one that they make with Lucky Charms.
Oh yeah, that's very lucky.
I was tempted, but erred on the side of not buying.
I just can't believe you didn't go for the Mint Guinness and the Lucky Charms Irish Red. Like those, like, have we jumped the shark as craft beer or what? When you see those as options, like compare the Irish section at Coltrane now to the Irish section of at Coltrane, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And
yeah. Cases of Killian's and a bunch of Guinness, some Bass, some Harp, you know, the standards. And now
It's Adjunct City.
Yeah.
I thought
Wild West.
It was really sort of refreshing. One of the local food writers, Matt Schnipper here in Colorado Springs, put up a screenshot of an article he wrote while he was in college at CC. So the article's from 2001, which is, 2001 is a long time ago for anyone in the craft beer scene in Colorado. And they were reviewing, I think, Flying Dog IPA or something like that. Some, really middle of the road IPA compared to today's standards.
Flying Dog had that tap room on Union Academy for the longest time. So, they were kind of local in that regard.
Yeah, they were expanding like crazy in Colorado. Then they just, noped out and got out of here.
Yep.
But no, so it was funny to read through his original. He was basically saying, "Oh, to be young and not know as much about beer as I know now." And he was like, "I at that point I hated IPAs and I still don't really like them, but like I at least appreciate them more than I did then." And if you think about that, 2001 when IPAs were out, that's right when we were talking about the IBU wars, and that's when people are just putting piney hops. That's when you're just putting Centennial and Challenger and all these Nugget
Magnum
Millennium, all these hops that are just like melt the enamel off your teeth. They're so bitter. So it's really interesting just seeing that. So I wanted to sort of throw that out there. But yeah, we actually have some events happening this year, which is weird.
half the reason we were on the hiatus we were on is because there weren't events, these things to talk about that people, could go to and, get together and, focus on the beer together as opposed to individually in your own homes. And so that's half the reason we're having this episode is to celebrate the fact that beer festivals are back and now you can see us in person again, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. So first event that's upcoming here, it's actually going to happen on St. Patrick's Day, is the opening of Trinity's second location, which I've seen some waves and ripples in the local scene where people are like, but it's like a block from their old location.
Right around the corner. And it's not like it's an old location. They're going to keep them both open.
Right.
It's not like they're closing one to do the other one.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Red Leg Brewing moved out of their Forge location to their new, brand new, amazing facility over on West Garden of the Gods. But in the interim, had not been able to get their brew house running in July when they opened. They were able to get the new brew house up and running by about September-ish, I believe. So they were still using that old location, all the while trying to find a suitor to move in. Who better to, move into that location than another brewery that needs, the expansive space? So Trinity had been working on the deal for a long time, and it was weird. I've been perusing the local liquor licenses and I saw Trinity Brewing got approved for a brand new brew pub, which is different. It wasn't a renewal. It was a brand new one. And I opened up the location and I look, it says Forge Road. I'm like, huh, that's interesting. I don't get out there very often. So
yeah, I think it makes sense because what they had for a brew system there at Trinity was, pretty small for what they were doing in the grand scheme of, the amount of beer that they were moving. So moving to that larger system at the Red Leg location just, really gives them a leg up in their ability to produce beer.
Well, and the old system was cobbled together. They always had to move seats out of the way to can. And, you're trying to run a restaurant and a brewery in the same space, sort of shared. And that presents a hurdle anytime that you're trying to, do a lot of distribution. And I knew that when Matt took over from Jason, that was one of the struggles that he was going to have to deal with. And this presents that perfect sort of solution to that. And also gives them a space to let their brewer, John, actually do some fun things and put out, you know, just special things that are only at this tap room where it's not part of the, you know, almost like the flagship Trinity pub, but they're at this special distribution location where they've got their bigger system and they're doing canning and bottling there. It'll be interesting. I would love to see if they are going to keep the old system at the old space.
Well, the one thought that occurs to me with that is, you know, the old system might be good for doing a sour program. Just keep that as the sour system and then keep the system at the old Red Leg location clean. And then you've got your two work streams and you're not introducing bugs, you know, across platforms there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's probably, I mean, Matt, if you're listening, or John, if you're listening, that's a great idea. Josh, talk to Josh about his thoughts on this. Now, I'm pretty sure that they're in agreement, and that's probably what they'll probably do. So
that'd be my guess.
For anyone looking to do that, they'll be opening at 3 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day, which is today when this comes out. So, then this weekend, March 19th, is Firkin.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little emotional about this one because Firkin was really the last event any of us locally went to before, you know, the COVID shutdowns in 2020. You know, that happened. And I think the one last thing I did as a beer journalist at that point was go to like the Women's International Collaboration Brew Day. And then it was literally like a day or two later, it's like, nope, everything shuts down. And that was, you know, kind of the bookend for where it all started. And it's nice to kind of come back and do it again as we're getting towards what's hopefully the end of the whole pandemic and moving into, you know, endemic status or whatever it is that's next.
Yeah, who knows what's next. It'll be an interesting Firkin though. So they did a smaller crowd size. And I think that's a response to you know, events in the pandemic. So they needed to restrict how many people are going in and out or going into their facility all at once. So they're doing less people there, but the brewery lineup is it's not a whole lot less, but it's a very different turnout than we've had in years past.
Now, looking at the list you compiled, it looks a lot more local than it's been in the past.
Yeah, so like the last time it happened, there was about 22 to 24 breweries. I know they had a list of like 25 breweries, but then like two or three of them couldn't make it because there's always horrible weather right before it. And just like this week, it's supposed to snow two days right before the festival. So, you know, they had like 22, 24 breweries there. And about six of those breweries were from Colorado Springs. Now, this time around, there's about 16 breweries signed up as of the time when they sent us the list. There may be more that come, and some breweries also might bring more than two, you know, more than one beer. Everyone's bringing at least one. Some people might bring more than one. But the majority of those breweries are now from Colorado Springs. So I think there were 16 at the time that we put out the list on Monday, with the thought there might be a couple more that jump on later on, and 10 of those 16 were from Colorado Springs. So sort of an interesting flip-flop. One of the things that we think might be causing that is that the Rocky Mountain Microbrewery Symposium that Josh talked about earlier terms of the brewed IPAs, that isn't happening this year. And that usually coincided with a Colorado Brewers Guild dues meeting, like where all of the guild members would come and pay their dues to the guild at a specific meeting. That would happen the same weekend of Firkin. And so it was a reason for these breweries that were maybe not always, you know, coming to Colorado Springs to come and bring a beer to Colorado Springs and serve it at a festival. That, as far as I'm concerned, or as I know, RMMS isn't happening this year. Their website is pretty much non-functioning. Their Facebook hasn't posted since 2020. So there isn't RMMS happening, and I believe maybe the guild went to online payments, like because of all of this, and so there's not that drive for people to be here in Colorado Springs and be at a physical meeting. So then there's no reason to be at this festival. or at least no, like, it's not like a double whammy. They're not able to, to knock two birds with one
stone. No secondary reason to be at the festival.
Right. So it's going to be a lower amount of breweries there, lower amount of people, which I hope they'll be able to sort of keep it in that main brew house area and sort of keep that intimate feel, so that it doesn't feel like you're just like, oh, there's nobody here. It'll still be great. It's always going to be a fun time. Firkins are always interesting because no matter who is coming, Firkin beer is always a fickle beast, because you can have the best brewery in the world make a Firkin and it could be the worst beer in the world, because that Firkin is this small little capsule of, you know,
chaos
and questions. Totally. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. I'm excited for, you know, there's a couple breweries that there's a brewery I've never had before, Carbondale Beer Works. They're coming, which, you know, I think they're coming the longest distance. So it'll be really interesting to have them there. Epic Brewing out of Denver is bringing some good stuff, so I'm excited to see what they have. So there's going to be some great beers there. It's going to be a good time. I think there's still tickets available, so hop on those. They're general admission. I think it goes from 2 to 5 at that point. VIP is already sold out. That sold out in like a week. But all tickets come with lunch. So if you decide that you want to come, you're going to get lunch no matter what. You just won't get a t-shirt, I think is what you get with VIP versus that.
Yeah, and extra hour and a t-shirt is basically the difference.
Yep. So that's happening this weekend, which is going to be, I think it'll be a great time.
I'm looking forward to it.
And then next up in April, so, you know, just a couple of short weeks from now, is Collaboration Fest.
It's a couple of our favorites coming up, one right after the other here to kick things off. And I know you attended the Media Collaboration Brew Day. Remind me again what the media made.
So we made a triple IPA with Burns Family Artisan Ales.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really fun to go to a brew that I'd never been to in Denver. So Burns Family Artisan Ales, someone was asking them about them at our son's birthday party, asking like, so what, like, who are they? And I described them as the Paradox Brewing of Denver. So, and at least Paradox win. And I will asterisk there, this Paradox win. Jeff Ehrman had a lot to do with what Paradox was making. So it was their stuff seems very culinary driven, where it has a lot of these things that are one of their big series is this genealogical, where different plants and botanicals that have this genealogical connection are used in these sours and these wild beers, to where it's things that maybe don't have the same exact flavor. Like, it's not something you'd think about adding together. The one that I remember on the top of my head, I think it was honeysuckle and cilantro. And because they are like in the same genus of species, like there's some relation between the two plants that they have very similar, like essential oils in them or something like that, that basically allows it to work. So them paired together makes the beer really have this really unique flavor. And they've done a whole series of these where there's all these sort of pairings of these things that are all sort of, that sort of work together and sort of compare and contrast and make the beer a nice, better thing. But then they also make big, huge imperial stouts, a lot of barrel aging, but then also pilsners, lagers, and saisons. So,
yeah,
across the gamut, but I don't think I saw an IPA there when I was there.
Yeah. So be kind of neat to see how that one turns out if it's not something that they usually make. Although I have to feel, you know, they had to have made an IPA before.
Oh, yeah. And it might just be when
what brewery hasn't.
When I was there, it was during Stout Month. So they had like 12 different stouts on tap. So sure. Pretty sure it's probably just that they just didn't have that, have it available at that time. But yeah, they do a lot more of this sort of, I want to say style bending type brewing, which is where I think Paradox fits in, is where they take the style and they go, all right, how far can we push this almost to its breaking point? And sometimes it does break and it doesn't work perfectly, but other times it just straddles that line and just it's incredible. So we had the, I think we had the clover and something sour at the party, and it was, it had this really nice sour note, but it was also smooth. Like, it didn't have the acidic bite that a lot of sours have. So it had that nice crisp sourness, and the you could taste the clovers and the, I think it might've been clover honey, not clovers, but you could taste the adjuncts, and it really, it was very interesting. So I'm excited to see how that beer turns out. There's a bunch of other weird ones. I think people are doing like ramen beers, and it just,
I did see that.
Yeah. There's a bunch of, I mean, it's a time for brewers to be, to have fun a little bit, but also, you know, they can get away with doing something that's maybe not the most, you know, something that's not going to sell a million tickets or a million pints in their brew house. So,
but it's a place for fun, gimmicky beers, which I think is why it's, you know, one of our favorites, certainly when it's held.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to look forward to Bear Brewing and Mockery. They've been doing since like 2015. They collaborate with each other each year for this festival. And they basically have this like they have like lore that's set up behind the beers that they've made. So their story started with like getting lost on Lacto Island in 2015 when they did a kettle sour IPA. And then like this, like I think, one of the years they headed to Inferno Island with like smoked pineapples. And so there's this whole like backstory that they have, behind all the different beers that they have. That's this sort of adventure story. So we'll see what they bring. It'll be interesting to hear what they're going to make. I think they keep it pretty on the DL going into the festival.
Nice.
But yeah, April 2nd, and tickets are still available, I believe. That's going to be at the Fillmore in Denver. Yeah,
I was going to say that's at a different location than it was last time we went. So Fillmore this year.
Yeah, Fillmore, it'll be an interesting space for a beer festival. We'll see how it turns out.
I think it'll work well. I mean, that place had plenty of beer spilled in it. So yeah,
exactly.
Par for the course.
And then a couple short months after that, we've got two beer festivals in June that we'll probably both be at.
Yep.
We'll start off the first one, June 11th, is our local one that we always love, which happened in October of last year, I think.
They ended up having to move it out of June last year, and now they're kind of back to their original time slot.
Yeah, Feast of St. Arnold at the Episcopalian Church over by the Broadmoor. That'll be June 11th from noon to 4:30. They have they already have 11 breweries signed up, so I feel like that's a good sign. Weldworks, of course, you know, they're still working on their College Springs location, so they're gonna still make a good effort to be at that place. Wibby Brewing out of Longmont will be there. I love their lagers, so
nice.
That'd be nice to
solid
have
solid addition. And of course, we'll be helping out with the judging for that again this year. It was definitely a lot of fun last year doing that, and they keep inviting us back, so we can't be screwing it up too badly.
Yeah, I may just volunteer to steward again. That was really fun. I enjoy doing that part of it. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It looks like Bell Brothers, who they'll be there because they just opened, and OCC will be there. So they're two of the new guys that have signed on. And right now, you know, there's only 11 breweries signed on. It's not everyone has signed up for it yet. They usually pack out a big list of people. I did see that Bristol was the sponsor of their like beer alley or whatever. So, you know, Bristol will be there just based on that, but they're not listed on their list right now.
There's always a few you can count on. I'm sure Nana will be back. Zach will want to defend his title.
Yep. They're already listed.
And Battle Mountain came in second last year. So I'm sure they want to come back and give it another shot. So it's a fun festival, you know, not because of the beer, but also, you know, kind of talking to that same point with Collab Fest. the brewers there are encouraged to have a story for their beer and why St. Arnold would brew it. And so, you know, some guys get real creative with it. Some take a very historic bent. Some bring in ancient aliens. It's all over the place, and it's a lot of fun.
But it's also a great festival because they have a playground. They have kids activities. So if you need to, like, you know, hey, if it's your wife's Saturday that she needs to go, you know, hang out with her friends or go do, you know, her own thing, you can offer to take the kids to the beer festival and, you know, let them just hang out and play. They've got water features and things like that. It's a great time for the kids. So they always try to really sort of push that it's a family friendly beer festival, which is not a whole lot of beer festivals are like that. So,
yeah. And they do a good job. It's all outside. They provide shade tents and that sort of thing, which is good. 'Cause one year I darn near got heat stroke there. So it's, they're doing it right for an outside festival in the middle of June.
And then the next one, I know we're just
sort of an inside festival at the end of June.
This one's a big one. And this one has been pushed back a bunch of times. It's the WebWorks Invitational up in Greeley. They have a list of breweries that is pretty jaw dropping right now. They have 46 breweries signed up. There's going to be 2 3-hour sessions. For anyone that had a ticket to the last one that got canceled, you probably have already bought your tickets because there's a link that you got sent on March 9th that has a chance for you to go get your tickets. If you're listening to this and check your spam folder. But some of the, just, you know, I scanned through the list and some of the ones that really caught my eye, you know, there's the standout Colorado ones, Cerebral, Casey Brewing, of course, WebWorks is going to be there. New Image will be there. You know, a lot of I want to say hazy IPA people that are really good at making really good hazy and barrel aged stuff. But then some of the ones from outside of Colorado that I'm really excited for, like Casa Agria, especially Ales, will be there. Funk Factory Gooseria will be there. Great Notion Brewery out of Portland, they'll be there. Microphone, Jester King, Moxa.
Bearded Iris coming back this year too, or no?
Let's see. I don't see Bearded Iris on their list. It is still early. June's still a pretty long ways away. But
Side Project
on there. Nice. Russian River's on there. The Vale, which we've had some of their stuff before. Mm-hmm. Toppling Goliath, Trillium out of Boston will be there. Weathered Souls, Superstition Meadery, which is they've been doing a bunch of meadery collaborations with WebWorks, or they did a couple, I think. They're really interesting. Pure Project, Pulpit Rock, Primitive Beer will be there. I love having them at different beer festivals. And then some of the ones that I've liked whenever I go out to the East Coast, Ology and Other Half will be there as well. So there's a bunch of lists. If you go to WebWorks.com /WebWorks-invitational, it has the full list. They have a code of conduct for if you're going to be there, which is really cool because they talk about, you know, we don't want you to get too drunk. If you're too drunk and you're going to hurt yourself or hurt someone else, we're going to act on that and either make sure you don't do that. Their pour list is not out right now, but they've got a really, really cool setup right now where, you know, it's two sessions. So 11 to 2 is the early morning session, and then 4 to 7 is that sort of night session. It's at the Doubletree in Greeley, same location that was at, you know, in the years past where it's been. So those tickets for the general public who haven't had tickets that got canceled previously go on sale March 19th. So if you're at Firkin and you're like, I'm bored, I'm just sitting here drinking too much beer and I'm just enjoying myself too much, hop online, buy a ticket to the WebWorks Invitational. It'll be a good time.
You know, there's one event we forgot in May that we're going to.
There's something in May. Oh yeah. That one with three letters, the C, the B, and the C.
Yeah, Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Craft Brewers Conference. the very first week in May. I think it's the 2nd through the 5th, if I've got my dates correctly remembered, which who knows? I've been drinking coffee stouts. We'll be in Minneapolis, Minnesota, checking out CBC.
Yeah, they're finally doing the full-on conference separate from GABF. I know last year they did sort of a truncated one, sort of at the same time as a non-GABF GABF, which is sort of a different way to do it. But hopefully this year, with things getting back to normal, fingers crossed, knock on wood, they're doing this the conference in Minneapolis at the Minneapolis Convention Center. So it'd be really good to get out there and see all the different breweries that we don't get to see very often. I know Josh gets up there more often than I've ever been up there. I don't think I've actually ever been to Minneapolis. So it'll be interesting to sort of just see how other people are doing it, but also to learn from a lot of their speakers to sort of see, how breweries are approaching different parts of how this industry works in a sort of post-pandemic world. Like what adjustments are breweries going to be making to ensure that, this sort of national or worldwide event may not affect them as much going forward.
Yeah. Or even just recovering from other things like supply line issues, the fallout from certain packaging options being more difficult to come by or requiring some different hoops to jump through, like the whole ball canning fiasco that kind of got rolled back, but I'm sure it may come back in some way, shape, or form. There's definitely concerns like that that are going to impact the industry, and people are looking for how they're going to work around it or solve it.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting just to see what I feel like it'll be a different conference because just of the implications of the last 2 years. It has really sort of changed what the brewing industry is and will be going forward. And like Josh said, supply lines, ingredients, like what people are going to be able to get, how they're going to get them and the availability of those things that they're, used to being able to just pick up the phone, order it and be there in 2 or 3 days. It might not happen that way. So it'll be interesting to see the approach that the Brewers Association takes to topics like that. And I really think it will be a different festival because of that. So, I think that's it. We had a note here to talk about Steers and Beers at Bristol, but that's in September. I don't think their tickets are on sale yet, but that's another fun festival here in Colorado Springs. That's been sort of jumping around to different locations. It's sort of an all in one. So there's distilleries. It's sort of like Feast of Arnold. So there's Feast of Arnold where there's different things than just beer there, but it looks like they're hosting it at Bristol this year, which is pretty interesting. I think Bristol has expanded their liquor licensing to have all of their outdoor area encompassing with the liquor license, which I think will help with festivals like this. So,
yeah, I think this used to be at the Antlers.
Yeah,
in past, I believe.
Yeah, they've had it there, and they've had it at feel like they did it at Norris Penrose, where Haunted Brewfest hosts theirs, but I'm not totally sure. Honestly, I think it's usually the same weekend, or in previous years, it's been the same weekend as Ska and Cerberus and other things. So we just never were able to put it on our schedule. But
yeah, now it looks like it's later because usually that stuff's first weekend in September. So it being later in September, we can check it out this year.
Yep. So if you if you have any ideas for us to talk about on our next episode, which we were going to do, we'll probably do another one here to talk about CBC more in depth. If you have any ideas, shoot us an email at podcast@focusonthe.beer, and we will try to include your thoughts in our next episode.
Yeah. Happy to be back. Yeah. Happy to be beer festivaling again.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be a little weird.
Good weird.
Yeah, it's going to feel different. So
yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Cheers.
Yep. Cheers. Have a good night.